We're going to talk about the acquisition of a new laboratory information system. I'm sure plenty of you have been through the process at least once. How many have been through an acquisition process at least once? And you're still
surviving. And you're still here? I don't believe it. Okay.
Good news.
Now I have one question for Bruce. Have you implemented appropriate security procedures so hard throwable projectiles have not been allowed with the vendor's hands? Okay, thank you. Just checking. Okay. What Bruce asked us to do is come up here and do a song and dance show. So what we're going to do is we're going to alternate. One of us is going to do the song, and the other is going to do the dance, and then one of us is going to do the dance, and one of us is going to do the song. So
the topics we're going to talk about, considerations for evaluating and selecting a laboratory system, and talk about different kinds of approaches. There are many different ways, as you know, to skin a cat. Unfortunately, they're all fatal to the cat. We will talk about some different approaches in selecting a laboratory system. We'll talk about demonstrations and how to orchestrate demonstrations, get the most out of them. And we'll talk lastly, but not leastly, about how to have a contract that protects your interest and also protects the interests of your vendor.
So, you know, what we're trying to do is talk about these topics. Do I really need a new system? How do I go about that process? Do I want to replace what I have? Is what I have good enough so all I need to do is surround it with additional capabilities? Who's good in the industry? How do you go about finding out which candidates are the correct people for you? Do you want to go best of breed? In other words, or do you want to have single vendor? Dennis is a firm believer, if you can find a solution for one vendor that meets all of your unique business needs, that may be a good idea. But if you have some unique business needs that can't be met by a single vendor, such as, do you have a centralized transfusion service? And you really need those capabilities of a centralized transfusion service. And the vendor that is providing your total laboratory information system does not have that capability, but that's a key business need, then maybe you may have to look at a best-of-breed solution for that component of it.
Yes. Now this particular slide, these nine items, this is basically everything that you need to know at the top level about the evaluation and selection process, that it is multi-phased. So there are nine things. First of all, it has do we need a new system, first of all? There are some criteria that you can look at that said maybe we can do things to keep our system. But the other steps are, first of all, you need to understand who's good, who's out there, who are viable candidates for your particular laboratory, your particular hospital. You want to look at best of breed or single vendor. The next thing is, what do they got? And you need to get information about the systems and their corporate information. And this is a very dynamic industry, as you well know. If you look at a laboratory information system or a company, you looked at them 6 months ago, you need to look at them again because things change very rapidly. You need to find out what will it cost. Get cost quotations for the system according to your requirements and your specifications. You need to ask. You need to listen. And telephone reference checking, we'll go into more detail on these items in just a bit, but telephone reference checks are a very economical way to talk to your peers who are using the system you're considering. And they will talk your ear off, I guarantee it, very inexpensively.
Yeah, especially if you call the users that aren't on the list that was supplied to you by the vendor.
Also, taking a note from the rock opera Tommy, you need to see it and feel it and touch it. And this is where the on-site demonstrations come in. On-site demonstrations are extremely important, and we found that 98% of the decisions at the time a vendor is actually selected occurs after the demonstration. Another thing that's useful doing is to visit peers and to validate. As a validation tool, site visits are very valuable. As selection tools, they're not quite as useful. We have a general rule of thumb that says if you're considering a site visit, and it's in Minneapolis in the middle of the winter, you probably don't want to take it.
Right, but if it's in Hawaii in the middle of January, you might as well think about going. And more important, if the vendor's house that they live in is in Hawaii, that's probably even better. So.
So visit peers, validate with site visits, tighten the screws, that is in contract negotiations. We'll spend a good deal of time talking about contract negotiations, when it should start, what's involved in doing it, so that your interests are protected. And finally, and very importantly, go to their house. A lot of the processes of evaluation and selection do not involve going and visiting the vendor of choice. It's very helpful to go and visit a vendor's headquarters to see, for example, if they're operating out of a tent. If they're operating out of a tent, you probably might be a little bit concerned.
Or a houseboat.
Or a houseboat.
You know, part of about going through this process, that's interesting, evaluating, selecting, is really to look at and obtain. Because what you may think and know about that vendor and that vendor's product may have changed 6 months ago because they just had a brand new release or they just got acquired by somebody and you're not aware of it. I think more important is before you even start this process, you need to understand what your needs and requirements are. To really go through your processes, go through what your key requirements, your key business needs, your key business issues are. What are the key things that are facing you as an institution? And understand those before you even start looking and evaluating at other systems.
We'll talk a little bit about paralysis through analysis. And quite frankly, we've seen that happen a lot, and you may have as well, in going through this process. It's important, too, to think about a couple of things in this entire evaluation, and that is you need to be both confident in your selection and comfortable. So there's both a cerebral and a gut-level activity that needs to go on, and both of those things need to be in sync before you can make a decision and select your LIS vendor. Last but not least, make a decision.
And try not to have it take 4 years to make that happen.
And I don't know why those characters are funny. I'm glad that Michael Dell is back in charge of the company.
Right.
whose computer is this, by the way, Bruce? It didn't show up that way on ours.
No, sure didn't.
Okay.
That was better. So.
I'll take that.
Yeah, in looking at what are the key factors that you should look at in influencing this process of acquiring an LIS system, obviously one is it has to be able to have the functionality to meet your needs. But I think what's more important is that even though you may have some needs and functions that are required, if the vendor doesn't have that functionality, then all you can do is buy what that vendor has. You can't buy what they don't have. And that's an important thing to understand. I think also important is the compatibility and synergy with all the rest of the things that are going on with your institution. Okay. If there has been a corporate decision within your institution that thou shalt be a Microsoft shop and thou shalt be running in SQL, and that's the only thing that's allowed in this institution, and you're trying to buy a product that's running in Sybase on a Unix platform, you may have a big problem. So that's another part of those decision processes that need to take place. Yes.
Yeah, and of course, growth potential to be able to project the growth capabilities that you're going to need for both the hardware and the software. Cost, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, cost, we don't want to consider cost right now. But, you know, cost always becomes an issue at some point in time. But I will say this. It's interesting, in the many years that both Hal and I have been doing this, you know, the low-cost spread, to my knowledge, has never won. And sometimes if the cost is so low compared to the other competitors, the low-cost bidder gets immediately thrown out because it seems obvious to the folks evaluating it, these people don't understand the problem, or they would be clustered with the other folks. But cost is always important. So another thing that, in addition to cost, and more important than cost, is to look at value. You know, what's the return on investment? What is the system doing for you compared to the other alternatives? So relative value is important. You need to consider the support and maintenance cost. You know, some of you can remember when the annual support and maintenance cost from vendors was 12%. Does anybody know what it is typically now? 18, 20?
21% for blood bank systems and so on.
So those are considerations as well, plus what you get for that money. So these are all things that need to be considered. And others.
I think, you know, one of the things you're doing is you're entering into a very long-term relationship. You know, 15 years ago, that meant 5 years. Today, In this LIS market, there are over 1,600 systems installed in large institutions, over 300 beds, that have been installed over 10 years. So the relationship you're going to be entering with that vendor is probably almost as important as the product. Because in the long term, it's that support you're going to get. What support? What's their reputation in keeping their clients happy? And what am I going to get over the next 10 years in terms of ongoing support and solution from that vendor?
Implementation time, corporate financial stability, again, whether they're operating out of a tent or not, strategic direction. We'll talk about this some more. I think it's very important to recognize and understand your vendor's business strategy. Where are they going? What market are they after? If you are a relatively small, mid-size reference laboratory, for example, and their primary market target are large university academic teaching hospitals, your voice is going to be a voice in the wilderness. So part of this evaluation process needs to consider, is your business direction, is your strategic direction consistent with the strategic direction of the vendor that you're considering?
Right. And I think also the thing you have to look at is, what do I need to do to install and keep the system running? If it's a system that requires a lot of maintenance, a lot of expertise, if I can't have a med tech who is fairly up on information technology components write the expert rules, but I have to go hire three programmers to do that, that's something you have to really understand, and that's part of this whole process. Because the overall cost of implementing a system is not just what you pay the vendor. It's all of your internal cost to implement it, to install it, and to keep it going afterwards.
This is a slide that we use that the vendors don't particularly care for. And the reason they don't care for it is that basically what we're saying here is though vendors have different strengths and weaknesses, that in aggregate, if you remember your calculus, the area under the end of the curve, and it'll go calculus, the area under the curve for most of the leading vendors is about the same. If you took them and compared them and kind of weighed what they did, looked across all the leading vendors, the weight of those and their capabilities would turn out to be very, very close. What's different is how well they do certain things. And if this particular factor, which is very strong for the green vendor, is something that's particularly important in your laboratory, then the chances are much higher that you will select that vendor, even though they have other areas that are relatively weak. It's important in this evaluation process for you to understand what that curve looks like. Also recognizing that they're all good, and that to a large extent, particularly in the more classic areas of laboratory information systems, one can almost consider laboratory information systems today as commodity items. Vendors don't like to hear that. They like to think they're really special, they're really different. And again, that's not true in aggregate, at least in our judgment.
Well, let's talk about some alphabet scrambles.
For those of you who can't decode that, it says time for some alphabet soup.
I guess we need to pick the right font next time. One of the things, vendors and people in the industry are terrible because they use acronyms for a whole lots of things. Nobody wants to talk in real words. It's all alphabet soup. And a lot of the words you'll hear is like a RFI or request for information. What this really is a way for you to get information to validate who the vendors are that are most likely for you to continue a discussion with. It's an initial screening process. It is not a voluminous document that will end up being this high that you have to go through. But it's a way to understand, one, does the vendor have the basic capabilities you need to meet your key business objectives?
Then there's an RFQ, or sometimes called an RPQ. That is a request for price quotation. And that's a document and a method to find out, based on your requirements, the number of workstations you have, the number of interfaces you have, your workload volumes, what is it going to cost to install, to license, install, and maintain the information systems. It's a separate type of approach for gathering information. And finally,
a request for proposal.
That's what
it looks like when you get it back.
This is directly from the Rosetta Stone. And sometimes, you know, sometimes those requests for proposals are very much like a Rosetta Stone without the translation. And what you send out is your interpretation comes back in an entirely different language from the vendors. But anyway, let's talk a little about a request for proposal. Again, we're going to talk about alternatives approaches to this whole process. And those of you who've been through it know that it is an arduous process, because we can tell just by looking at you that you've had some difficult process. Yeah. RFP is it's a detailed analytical form. It needs to ask differentiating questions. For example, if you ask any of the vendors, do you accept patient demographic information? What do you think the answer is going to be? It is going to be yes. Yeah. What have you learned? Nothing. So it's important to ask differentiating questions in this. An RFP will include the information about an RFI, and it should also include information about getting price information. One thing, let me comment. Hal and I have not done this tag team before, so we may be jumping over each other. But don't worry about it. We'll be friends afterward. One thing that very often is neglected in the request for proposal, and that is to consider how you're going to evaluate this, the responses in advance. And, you know, there's a rule of thumb that says if you send out as a request for proposal document something about this thick, you will get back a factor of roughly 10 to 1.
Yeah, not that high.
So if you send out 2 inches, you will get 20 inches of information back. Be prepared. Try to minimize the size of your RFP to ask differentiating questions. And also consider how you're going to evaluate it in advance, because we mentioned that we had a bullet that said paralysis through analysis. I can tell you, if you send an RFP out this big to 10 vendors and get back this much for each member of your evaluation team, you will fill your library with documents. And people will have a really hard time getting through all of that, particularly if you have not established the process that you're going to use to evaluate those proposals.
I think the other thing to consider is vendors have become very good in finding out a way to answer yes to everything.
We've both done this in the past, right, by the way.
So we know. We're speaking from experience. So it's important to, when you're going through that evaluation process, to really ensure that the questions you're asking are such that you also require them to comment, if you're going to go through this process, what they really mean by their answer, or provide examples. Because vendors are very good in saying, well, I really interpreted you meant to say this, and that's what it meant, so that's why we answered yes. Which means that when you go through your evaluation process, everyone gets 100%, and everyone wins, and that isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the other thing is real quick is that the real trick is to finding out what it is the vendors really have.
Yep. Doesn't matter what you ask for. They can only sell you what they have. Anyway, the RFP may not be the final step, and it might not be necessary, because we talked about a voluminous response may not be comparable. The answers may be ambiguous. It's very hard to write unambiguous questions. The vendors will answer, I believe, honestly, but they will try to answer the questions in the best light for what their system can do. And the answers and the questions can both be ambiguous. It's an imperfect form. We acknowledge that, but it can certainly help to evaluate it.
I think there's been many different approaches to acquiring, in terms of the process, to acquiring an information system. The traditional approach was you send off an RFI, find out about the vendors you want to send to, then you write this detailed RFP, send it off, get the questionnaire back, have on-site demonstrations where this week this vendor comes in, this week, the next week the other vendor comes in, and then you go out on site visits, and then you select a vendor, and then you go into contract negotiations. Both Dennis and I over the years have felt that this is an imperfect form, that there are better ways to do this.
There's another approach is a semi-traditional approach. I think that's what it says. in which, first of all, today with the access to Google and the Internet, the RFI is almost an artifact, because you can go and look at vendor websites and kind of qualify them, and you can use CAP Today's surveys and other information that's available to get enough information about the vendors and basically just begin with, let's say, a request for price quotation without going into the expense and the detail of the detailed request for proposal. You can do on that basis, in response to the vendors, you can do some telephone reference checking. It's a good idea, and you probably know this, to ask for the complete user's list from your vendor. I might have had vendors that say, well, we have 250 users. And we say, well, you send us your complete user's list, and you get 20. Well, what happened to the other 230 users? Why aren't they on the list?
And don't accept the statements as well. You know, we have all these confidentiality agreements we signed with all these vendors who won't let us give you their names.
Helen mentioned about the demonstrations being sequential. Let me say this. This is a really key thing. Demonstrations are extremely important. We'll spend some time this morning talking about how to orchestrate them and how to get the most out of them. But it's very important to do, if you're going to have two or three or four vendors come in, have them come in at the same time to your institution. I've had clients say, are you kidding? How am I logistically going to manage that? Where am I going to put these people and so forth? But I'll also tell you this, after they've done it, kicking and screaming, been absolutely thrilled about the information they were able to obtain because all the vendors were there at the same time. They have an opportunity to iterate, to go from one vendor to the other. See something at the first vendor, go to the second vendor, see something really nice, be able to go back to the first vendor and see if they have that as well. Also, if you spread it out over time, I guarantee you, people are going to forget what they saw.
Yes, CJ, I remember somebody had this neat function. Who was that?
Yep. Site visits, we think, are very useful as a validation tool. If there's a local site visit, that might be worth using. It's very, 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 very difficult to find a site, to make a site visit that, one, is similar to the way that you operate your laboratory or your institution. Because, as you know, laboratories are all the same, except for the differences. And everybody's different. And if you can find a site that's very, very close to yours, that's using the same hardware and the same software that's being prepared, that you're being proposed, that's useful. But I'll tell you, it's very, very difficult to actually find a good match that you can really learn and validate the system that you're going to get.
Most important, I think, is after you've gone through this process, is go to that vendor's, where that vendor is, look at their corporate environment, learn their corporate culture as much as you can. Meet the people who are actually going to be installing your system. Meet the people who are going to be supporting your system. I had one client who was sitting in a room with 20 installers, and this is after they were in the midst of negotiating the contract. We said, this wonderful group of people that are going to be installing this contract. And I asked the question, well, who's going to be installing this system? Not one hand went up. They hadn't even thought about that process of who was going to do what where. They haven't talked about that interrelationship. And that's an important piece because that's you're getting married to this person for the next 10 years. A separate approach, a different approach, this is a non-traditional approach, is to ignore that thing about who am I going to send an RFI to. It's pretty, in this environment, if you're in a particular segment of the market, there's only going to be a small number of vendors that are really going to meet your needs. So what you need, if you prepare your requirements document that really summarizes your functional, operational, and performance needs, and send that to a handful of pre-selected vendors.
Part of a handful.
And then go through the process of corporate visits and discussions of your requirements and the understanding of how well that vendor fits those needs, along with demonstrations and pricing processes. That way, in fact, could substantially improve the whole time frame of the cycle of evaluating and selecting a system.
This process is a lot less costly for the vendor and for you in terms of not preparing the RFP and all that type of thing, to the extent that probably, not guarantee it because I'm not a vendor, but probably the vendor would be willing to pay the cost of you coming to their corporate visit, spending a couple of days with them, going over your requirements document, meeting their principals, understanding their support philosophy, talking about pricing, talking about what they can do, talking about contracts. And in the course of two or three intensive days, hopefully paid for in Hawaii or wherever they may be located, you could learn a great deal, develop that high level of confidence and comfort in a decision. So there are a number of ways to do this. Traditional, non-traditional, semi-traditional.
And even a hybrid that basically says, do an RFI, RFQ, but only to a small, selected number of vendors. Start your reference checks, do your concurrent, and then start your corporate visits. So, yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean, yeah. That's why the traditional approach, for example, probably in the case of a county or any institution where you have to do that, you have to go through a very rigorous, traditional, probably very traditional, well-documented thing. But my feeling, I think Hal would agree, is that if you look statistically at the outcomes of any of these alternatives, that statistically they're all about the same. I mean, you get the same level of comfort and confidence and success whether you do a traditional and go through that, or whether you go through a non-traditional approach, still come out with an outcome that's good, and that's valid. But your point is well taken, Bruce. Yes, sometimes you have no choice.
So I think in summary, you need to get current valid data, and be able to compare that data amongst the vendors you're looking at. You need to focus on only those key issues. Don't allow yourselves to be stuck in the corner that, well, I really like the fact that this field is on this screen in this corner for this vendor. That's the way you're going to lose the control of that whole process. And as Dennis said, you've got to be confident and comfortable in your decision process. And that's both up here and down here and back here in your wallet.
That's right. There's an instance in which a laboratory did a very detailed analysis with an RFP proposal, detailed scoring, came out with vendor B scored 10,711.5 points, was the top in terms of the evaluation. The only problem was nobody in the lab liked them. Got to be comfortable, too.
And then, most important, make that decision. Don't put it off for 3 years. We're starting
we'll
to run out of time.
We'll move along. We translate for you. This is not a problem. This is getting the most from LIS demonstrations. This is what we're going to get. First of all, you don't want to have your Hal, break out your computer and show them that it works on that one. Is this yours, Bruce?
It's got to be your lab done. A part and parcel of this whole thing is you got to look at your priorities. What is most important, and rank those priorities in terms of functionality, and give that the most weight. So you don't want to give the fact that it's a pretty looking screen versus I can get a bill out twice as fast as I can today the equal priority level. You've got to really look at what's good in my system, what do I like, as well as what isn't working today. And I'll use that as a good ground basis to start this whole evaluation process.
There's an old expression some of you will remember about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. Never quite understood that, but you want to be sure that when you get a new system, the things that were good in your old one at least are replicated in some way and not lost to you.
And I think most important is don't let the vendor come in and just do their whiz-bang demo. There's some people who do wonderful demos. They can make you believe that what you're seeing, the system can walk and talk and do everything for everybody anytime, and it's so easy to do.
Hal was so good, actually. We were at different sides of the table, and Hal was with a vendor at one time, as I was many years ago, but he was a vendor. And whenever Hal would do a demonstration, I would make him roll up his sleeves all the way up. He was that good.
So one of the ways to ensure you've got the vendors on an even playing field is to give them play scripts that represent the way you want the system to work in your environment. The vendors will bitch and moan. They say, I can't do it. I don't have time. Don't believe it. They can do it.
Yeah. And we mentioned earlier, have them all on the same day. Logistically, it may be very difficult to do, but we absolutely, positively, money back guarantee you if you do that, your evaluation team and the folks in the laboratory and in IT will learn as much as you possibly can about the relative value and merits of these companies and these systems.
We talked about that. We keep going.
Getting those in advance, get them to require. One other thing about play scripts is, you don't have to do play script for everything. It'll take forever. Pick out some certain transactional sequences that are particularly important or significant in your operation. It might be in fast order entry. It might be in result retrieval, whatever it happens to be, or something in anatomic pathology, cytology. Make a place grid for that, but also give time for the vendor to show what's unique. They need to be able to show what their whiz bangs are, what kind of fun things they can do in addition to your place grids.
And also what they believe set them apart from the other vendors that you're looking at.
See, when you do a demo, you've got to see everything from beginning to end. Use the play scripts. Also, we've been in situations where you have a demonstration and you ask a question and the demonstrator, Hal never did this. Hal
no, never, good. Never.
The vendor would begin talking about how wonderful it was. It's kind of like the story about the IBM salesman, if you know that story. Rather than showing it to you, you need to see it. NPO, nothing by mouth. You want to see what the vendor can do.
And I think the other thing is very clear, is what they're showing you what's actually being used by some client out there, or is it some demo that they mocked up in the back room using PowerPoint or something, and they make it look like it really is the system? Very important, because you will find some people that, well, they're close to having this capability, so what they'll do is they'll mock it up for the demo.
Yeah. Be sure to ask. What is it that I'm seeing here?
Yeah.
And try it yourself. If you can, do some hands-on. If you see someone like Hal or some of the other folks you'll see out in the exhibit area, they are very, very good at this, and they will do something that seems like a flash. But try to do it yourself if you can, or have your counter, the peers, a chemistry supervisor, or someone do it themselves. Ask questions.
Lots of them.
Lots of questions. Compare it with the other vendors. And with this, when multiple vendors are on site at the same time, you have a chance to revisit these vendors, confirm things, and fill in the gaps.
Yeah, I think it's important if you sit and see a demonstration of one component from one vendor, 2 hours later go back and see the same demonstration from another vendor, see something that they're doing that's totally different. You may want to go back and ask that first vendor, this is what we saw, show me how you could do that same function.
And don't wing it. I mean, you need to have some simple mechanism to, even in the multiple vendors on site at the same time, you need to have some way to write down, record things that say, what did I like, what was strong, what was weak about this vendor, rank them 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, assign a merit value to them, because sometimes it's important. If you have two that first, one's first, the other one's second, but they're very close in this figure of merit, that tells you something as well, compared to the company that you like, number one, had a figure of merit of 10, the company that you like second had a figure of merit of 5. There's a big gap. So do some recording. Don't try to wing it.
Yeah, we got 5 minutes to do the rest.
Oh, yeah, we have 12. Let's talk about, I'll translate. specifying and negotiating a win-win LIS contract. Not this.
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk about what a contract is, types of contracts, how to negotiate, and a contract checklist, win-win criteria.
So what is a contract? The legal guys say it's all these things. It's a promise, a set of blah, 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 all this legal gooey-gook. In reality, what it is if you say you're going to do it, and if you do it, then you should get paid. If you don't, you should be penalized or not rewarded. That's pure and simple what a contract is.
That's true. And this is, yeah, okay.
So key premises in negotiation.
Four very key premises. Okay.
I think the worst time to negotiate a contract is during contract negotiations.
Your leverage is not that great if you've already said we want
that
you.
Much.
So that's important. Yeah. Second premise, there are vendor standard contracts. Some people want to throw those away. Shouldn't do that. They have value. We'll talk a little bit about the nature of some of those things. And a lot of these things can be changed, and it's very often a very good baseline to start with.
Because remember, that stuff in bold the vendor says is cast in concrete, it can be changed.
And in many cases,
must be changed.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it. And I think the other thing, the contract has to cover the entire system. If you're going to be buying hardware and software and implementation and services and support, the contract and database training, that contract should cover it all, not just a piece of software.
That's right. And in the end, it has to be fair and protect the interests of both parties. So probably with regard to contract, what we're going to talk about, this is probably the most important thing to think about and to try to remember. I'm translating one more time. Three generic types of contracts. These are legal terms that Hal and I came up with, based on our extensive legal training. First of all, there's the hard-nosed contract. This is the one that's rigid and flexible. It says everything in bold will not be changed. You will not take it out of bold. It has mostly negative and punitive conditions within it. And this can be something that your hospital creates as well as the vendor. That's a hard nose. Then there's another type.
It's loosey-goosey. And it's, well, you know, I'm kind of delivering something, and I'm not too sure what it is. But if it gets there, it may or may not work, but you're still going to pay me anyway.
That's right. And it may be missing some very important elements. One of the things that we always get a big kick out of is the thing that's in bold that says, we make no warranty express or implied for merchantability or suitability of purpose.
Or fitness of purpose,
Or fitness of purpose. What are we buying here? It ought to be at least fit to do what, you know, to do what an LIS would do. There's also a write-on. The write-on contract says, look, it's not necessarily what you want or have everything you want, but it includes the important provisions. It includes, for example, acceptance criterion. You may not agree with what the criterion for acceptance of the system are, but at least the contract has a section in there that covers acceptance and so on. So that would be a write-on type of approach to a contract.
And I think it's mutual and it's equal. It's reciprocal. So,
can you translate that?
About approach to negotiation.
What we're really saying is, rather than waiting to the end of the whole process to start negotiating your contract, put all the things that you feel are important in a contract between you and the vendor up front in the whole discussion process. Put it in your request for a quotation. Put it in your request for information. Because, in fact, some things you want to see in the contract may be things that actually cost money. If, for instance, you say, in a contract, I don't want the support dollars to start until 150 days after I go live, well, that's going to cost the vendor some money. They may agree to it, but it may have an impact on the price that they charge you. But if they don't know that up front, and you can ignore a whole bunch of minor kinds of things, but if you can get the key issues up front, then everyone's on an equal playing field. And that's important as you go through this evaluation process. The vendor response, whatever is written from that vendor saying, gee, how great this system is, and it can slice apples and talk and walk and squawk at the same time, should be part of that contract. If they're not willing to make that part of the contract, you've got a big red flag to look at.
Are there systems that do that, that actually walk and talk and squawk?
Sure.
I didn't know that. Get a sample contract during the selection process. As part of your RFP, ask for a contract. You may look at it and say, what is this crap? You may not want to go any further. Yeah. Have a negotiating team. Recognize what your objectives are. Remember, the goal here is you do want to sign a contract. That's why you're going through this process. So recognize what your objectives are. Be prepared to realize that there are going to be issues that have to be resolved. You need to be flexible. They need to be flexible. Don't be adversarial. These people are, you're going to be married to these people, as Hal says, for a long time.
I think you learn a couple things, too, during this contract negotiation process. If they treat you really bad before you're a client, what are they going to treat you like when you become one of their clients? Okay. I also think the other thing is very important, and being a vendor, one of the things we vendors like to do is find some insider who's going to give us all the scoop. You know, what's really important? How much can I really give away? Number one thing you got to tell all of the people in your organization, loose lips cost money.
So we're just going to run quickly through a contract checklist of things that we think are important that you have in a contract. We're not going to try to tell you what you want to say about them, but things that you should have in your vendor contract before you sign it. Obviously, you need to have the specifications for the system that you're going to get. The functions and the features, the operational characteristics, including performance criterion, reliability and availability criterion, backup and recovery. A lot of people forget about that. You want to be sure that if anything should happen, you don't lose your data and understand how to recover from that. Acceptance testing. You need to be able to say, okay, we will pay you a certain amount of money, a certain percentage, hopefully a fairly large percentage, that says after we have gone through these series of tests in an operational, a quasi-operational mode, and you pass those, then we will give you these final payments. So you need to have those criteria in the contract as well.
Yeah, as well as some performance criteria on when they're going to deliver, how well they're going to train your people, when will implementation milestones be met, and when they get met in a timely manner, as well as the quality of those of the delivery processes. The terms and conditions of the license. Is this? Am I buying a one-time license? Do I got to buy this license every year? If I want to add more users, what will it cost me? If I want to give this license to another hospital that might be part of this group, get all that done up front. And because if you don't, you might find out a real surprise that when you want to add that 50-bed hospital, it may cost you more in license fees than what you paid for your 1,000-bed hospital because you're now stuck. Get all that done up front.
Payment terms are always kind of fun. The vendors are typically, and they're business people, would like to get as much money at the time you sign the contract as they possibly can. I think a good general philosophy that I like to follow with regard to the vendors, which I think is fair, is that, fine, as we go through this implementation process, as we begin to install the system, the vendor is paid basically for their out-of-pocket expenses and their costs, but they do not receive any profit, zero profit, until such time as you, the laboratory, and the buyer get some value from that. That could be after acceptance period. It could be some period after that, but that seems to be a fairly reasonable thing. You get value, they get profit. You don't get your value, they don't get their profit.
Some of the other things, you know, especially what's going on in this industry, it's important. I don't know what you would do with it if it ever happened, but at least you can have some protection to ensure if the vendor goes out of business, you have the rights to find some fallback procedure, whether it's access to source code, whether it's ability for some third party for you to come in and hire to maintain the system for you. But you're covered with all those provisional things. It is not uncommon. I don't care how big the vendor is. They could decide not to be in this business tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's the facts today.
Warranties, how long the system is warranted for, when support starts, and so forth, or other considerations. We talked about including their proposal response. Vendors sometimes are reluctant to that with regard to including their proposal because they claim ambiguity. And that's correct.
I wonder why.
Well, there's ambiguity on both sides. There's ambiguity on the questions and there's ambiguity on the response. And I guess the thing is, if there are important considerations, that it's important that those particular points in the vendor's proposal are made unambiguous and clear and made part of the proposal, part of the contract.
Yeah. I think the confidentiality issue, especially now with all the regulations, is a very important component. The vendor access to your system when they're doing maintenance and support on your system, how well are you protected? And how well are they protected in that process? Mm-hmm. And we talked about what will it cost you to add another user? What will it cost you to add another hospital? Very important to get that up front.
Yeah. Negotiation, again, is a good time to lock prices for any future applications that you may not have been buying at this time. Maybe you want to add something later. Say, okay, I don't want to pay any more than this, and so no matter what the price is a year from now, I want my price locked. Be sure you get your manuals and all the documentation. And that you include provisions for the various support services in terms of how quickly they'll respond to problems, that type of thing. Third-party access hopefully isn't important as it was in many years ago, but as Hal said, you know, sometimes conceivably a company can go out of business or they can no longer support things, and you might want to have a contract provision that says, look, if you're no longer providing support to me for whatever reason, I have the right to find a third party who will provide that support. That can be important. It's a nice protection clause.
Then there's all the legal stuff. It's all that stuff in bold. And normally, that's the thing that you leave to the domain of your attorney. But I think it's important to recognize a couple of things. One, you're the buyer. One of the things you should insist on is it be the laws of your state that you have clear understanding of both cancellation remedies and liabilities. And I can say this from a vendor perspective because I've been there, as well as from the provider perspective. Don't ever let the vendor convince you that they can't ever do anything to that part of the contract, because they can, and they will.
And even though this, and this is the domain of your attorney, but one of the reasons we covered some of those other contract provisions, we think it's a good idea before you get your attorneys involved and their associated costs, is to go through this, the issues that are important from an operational standpoint, from a functional standpoint, from a performance standpoint within your laboratory, the kind of things we just, Hal and I just went over, before you even get your attorneys, because right. they're probably not qualified to do the kinds of things to be able to address those issues. They are for this, quote, legal stuff. Bring them in after you've resolved all that other things, right. and then get the legal things, the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
That's it. Fino, nomas, finito, the end.
No, no.
Okay.
Okay.
That
says.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.